And yeah, so apart from this, we're super happy to have Gabriel Wong from Fudan University with us, who's going to tell us all about recent work on generalized entropy in topological string theory.
Thank you for the invitation. This is a talk based on recent work with William Donnelly, Manky Kim, and Yikun Jiang, and there'll also be a follow-up coming soon. Can I just check with you guys, can you see my cursor?
Yep.
Okay, I should start by saying that I probably have too many slides and too much information, so please interrupt me and ask questions. I think having a dialogue would be the best way to go here. So I'll start by motivating the talk from the point of view of holography. There we have the HRRT, or generalized entropy formula, which is a basis for how we understand how space-time emerges from entanglement. It tells us that the entanglement entropy of a boundary subregion V here is given by the generalized entropy in the bulk. There is a leading area over 4G Newton term of this extremal surface, which is an analog of Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, and then a correction that is the entanglement entropy of bulk fields across this extremal surface. So we would like to ask, what is the bulk quantum mechanical interpretation of this area term? It's interesting because we think that it should be measuring the entanglement of the space-time itself. We want to understand this question from the point of view of the bulk string theory. Now, one of our inspirations comes from Susskind and Uglum, who proposed that Bekenstein-Hawking entropy is actually the entanglement entropy of closed strings across the event horizon of the black hole. So I'll come back to Susskind and Uglum in a moment. I want to first discuss the factorization problem and edge modes. So to talk about entanglement, we have to first factorize the bulk. This is a difficult problem because it is sensitive to UV degrees of freedom. For example, it was pointed out by Dan Harlow that if we look at the ADS-Schwarzschild geometry here, where there are two CFTs on the boundary. So in the boundary, we clearly have a factorized Hilbert space of the left and right CFT. But when we look at the bulk theory and we look at the low energy effective theory, it's not obvious that the bulk factorizes. For example, if we consider low energy gauge theory with a Wilson line that connects the left and right CFT through this wormhole here, in order for that to factorize that operator, we have to introduce heavy charges in the bulk here where this Wilson line can end so that we can make a gauge invariant operator in each separate subregion. And this introduces high energy microstates into the story. Another way to say the same thing is that we have to extend the Hilbert space of the low energy theory by entanglement edge modes, and these will probe the bulk microstates. It was conjectured that this area term in the generalized entropy may be the entanglement entropy of gravity edge modes that sew together the space-time here near the horizon. So I want to say a bit more about generalized entropy and especially the area term. The generalized entropy is computed by a Euclidean gravity path integral, z of beta, on a space-time which has a circle, a thermal circle at infinity of length beta. So we pretend that this is a thermal partition function and just compute using the thermal entropy formula in varying this thermal circle. And the leading term, the area term, comes from a saddle point of this path integral in which the circle shrinks smoothly in the interior to make the cigar geometry. So we need this smooth interior to get this, the non-trivial area term, but it prevents us from easily interpreting this path integral as a trace because we need a non-contractible cycle to get a trace. So how do we get a statistical interpretation of this area term? A naive way to do that is to just remove this little cap from the end of the cigar and then impose something that I call the shrinkable boundary condition. If I could design this boundary condition so that I recover the original path integral, then I really could view this as a trace. In fact, it even suggests that perhaps generalized entropy is entanglement entropy. If I flatten out the cigar and I poke a hole in the middle with a shrinkable boundary condition, is tempting to interpret the lower half of this geometry as preparing a state that's factorized into spatial subregions V and V bar. So it would suggest that this e to the minus beta h is a reduced density matrix. There's a problem here, however. In gravity, there's a topological constraint because of the Gauss-Bonnet theorem that implies that this shrinkable bounding condition given by this little cap here is non-local. This was discussed recently in work by Jeffers Koschmeyer. So it again seems to be an obstacle to interpreting this path and go as a trace. So now we want to look to string theory to resolve this puzzle, starting with ideas of Suskind and Uglum. So Suskind and Uglum considered string theory on a flat space where the Segard geometry is flattened. And they looked at the same formula for generalized entropy, except now log Z here is the string theory path integral on a space-time with a conical singularity. So this is this line here is a conical singularity, and there's opening angle beta around it. And now the path integral involves a perturbative expansion of the closed string diagrams. The area term comes from, I should say first that in this formula, so any term linear in beta gets killed by this derivative. And it turns out the nonlinear terms in beta that gives rise to the entropy have to either intersect or go around the diagram. The string has to go around the conical singularity. So it turns out the area term comes from this contact term, this sphere diagram that intersects the conical singularity. And Suskind and Uglum proposed that we can give a canonical interpretation to this area term by using open closed string duality. Instead of thinking about it as this diagram as a closed string emitted and absorbed, we view it as a one loop open string diagram where the open string is ending on the conical surface, which would be the putative entangling surface. The idea is that this open string here is really half of a closed string that's hidden behind the horizon. And so we can interpret this diagram as a trace and give a statistical interpretation to Bekenstein-Hawking entropy. So Will, Donnelly, and I try to realize this scenario in two-dimensional Yagnose and a string theory dual. And we find that we were able to obtain the same picture in which the string edge modes that contribute to entangled entropy are brains. They're the brains that these open strings are ending on and that you need to cut the closed string into open strings. Notice that even though we're studying closed string perturbative theory, we have to use non-perturbative objects, these brains, to cut the closed strings. So the general idea of this talk is that if we can realize Suskind and Uglum's proposal, then generalized entropy would have a interpretation in terms of entanglement entropy of closed strings. Okay, so now we turn to topological string theory, which is a simple enough model where we can make some headway in realizing these ideas I just mentioned. There was some previous work along the lines of entanglement entropy in string theory. The one that is most relevant to our discussion is, as I mentioned, the work on string theory dual to two-dimensional Yagnose, where we applied methods in extended topological quantum field theory. In this work, we upgrade to apply extended TQFT to the A-model topological string. It's a useful model because the perturbative amplitudes are computable to all orders in the string coupling. And remarkably, the string field theory is actually captured by a topological field theory. This is useful because we understand entanglement best in the second quantized rather than first quantized theory. And finally, it has an interesting UV completion in terms of Q-deform Yagnose. So I want to give an overview of what we did in our work. We studied entanglement entropy in topological string theory using Gopakuma-Vafa duality, which is a topological analog of ADS-CFT. So in this duality, the role of the bulk ADS is played by closed strings on a resolved conifold geometry. This geometry looks like a pyramid over an S2 times S3 base. And there's a radial direction along which the S3 shrinks, but the S2 stays a finite size, and there's some flux passing through it. On the open string side of the duality, we have a deformed conifold geometry in which we have instead the S2 shrinking to zero size as we move towards the tip, and the S3 stays a finite size, and there is a large n number of brains that we put on the S3. The idea is that the brains dissolve into flux, just like as in ADS CFT. However, there is a very important advantage, which is that we know the string field theory on both sides. On the closed string side, there's an A-model topological quantum field theory. On the open string side, there's UN transimmons theory. So what we did was to define a notion of generalized entropy for the closed topological string, the bulk geometry. And then we applied extended TQFT methods to factorize this bulk closed string Hilbert space. We computed, we gave a canonical calculation of the generalized entropy on both sides of the duality, and found an interesting phenomenon that the edge modes are actually anions that transform under quantum group symmetry. So we realized this idea of Susskind and Uglum that generalized entropy of closed strings is actually equal to thermal entropy of open strings that end on entanglement brains, which are the edge modes of the string theory. Okay, so this is an outline of the talk, but before I go on, let me just pause to see if there are any questions just about the introduction and the setup of the problem. Okay, so to begin, I want to first tell you about the state whose entanglement entropy we'll be computing. It's an analog of the Hodel-Hawking state in string theory. Then I want to formulate the factorization problem in the extended TQFT language, and then give you the A-model closed TQFT and our definition of generalized entropy. And then I'm going to show that the edge modes that you get from factorizing the closed string are actually D-brains, and give a canonical calculation of generalized entropy. I don't think I'll get to the dual story in this talk, but we can maybe chat about it in the discussion. So I'm going to introduce A-model topological strings briefly. So here's the resolved conifold geometry that we saw earlier. There is a S2 at the tip with a complexified area given by A plus IB. This B is the B field flux passing through the S2. So we're going to study topological strings on this geometry. More generally, the topological strings defined on a six-dimensional Kähler manifold that doesn't have to be Calabi-Yau. The reason this theory is simple is that the closed string theory localizes to Wilczek instantons that wrap minimal volume 2 cycles, which in this case is this sphere at the tip. And the amplitudes only depend on the Kähler modulus T here. So here's the expression for the free energy. It's an instanton sum where this G is the Wilczek genus, and this little n tells you the wrapping number of this Wilczek around the sphere at the tip. So all the action in the string theory is really happening around this, this sphere here. Remarkably, we can actually get an exact answer for the free energy and the partition function. Here I give you an expression in which this G string, the genus G has already been summed over. So we have the partition function, but I want to talk about Hilbert spaces in string theory. And to do that, I have to start by talking about time slices. It's not quite the same as in QFT. In the first quantized string theory, a state is a wave function of a closed loop. So here's a closed loop parameterized by a Wilczek coordinate sigma, and X mu is the embedding function that maps it into the target space X. Our single string wave functional is actually a function of the entire loop configuration. So the configuration space is actually the loop space of X. It's not the space time. When we second quantize the theory, the string field is an operator valued function on the loop space. We just take the single string wave function and promote it to an operator, but this operator still is a function null of the entire loop. This means that degrees of freedom live on the loop space, and so a time slice is really a subset of the loop space, which I call curly F here. Fortunately, in the topological string situation, things simplify a bit. If you give me a codimension one slice like this surface sigma here that cuts through my sphere, this is where I would normally define a QFT time slice. I can associate to it a time slice in the string theory by considering all of the set of loops that live inside sigma, where the entire loop is mapped to inside sigma here. In fact, because of the topological nature of the string theory, in this case, we can really only worry about non-contractible cycles where the closed string wraps. And inside the sigma here, there's only one non-contractible cycle here, and it belongs to this Lagrangian manifold L, which takes the topology of a non-compact torus. So for all intents and purposes, we can just treat the string loops as if they're living on L. And that's sort of the location of our time slice. Now, I want to define our states. So the reason we can define a Hodder-Hawking state for this resolved conical partition function is that it can be obtained by gluing objects called topological vertices. These are open string amplitudes with a large n number of brains or anti-brains living on Lagrangian L that we talked about earlier, which cuts through the sphere at the tip along the equator. So this is the sphere that was in the at the tip here of the resolved conifold. And we're going to introduce brains that cut through the equator, and the amplitude, the open string amplitude, in the presence of these brains, I'm going to denote by Z plus. We can also do the same with anti-brains. I'm going to call that Z minus. And if we annihilate the brain anti-brain pairs, we recover the world sheet that wrap the entire sphere. So this is a string theory analog of the Hodder-Hawking state in QFT, where you would say that I'll cut the geometry in half, and you will get each half is a cat in the bra. In this case, each half is actually a string amplitude where the world sheet is either wrapped upper or the lower hemisphere. This U here is actually the holonomy of the world volume gauge shield. In this case, because we're going to put a large n number of brains, the gauge group is U infinity. Now, I want to say a bit more about the Hilbert space. So we have this Z plus of U, which is a open string amplitude of world sheets which end on the Lagrangian brain. There's a holonomy, the world sheet holonomy, a world volume holonomy that is given by this expression here. So if I want to if I compute this actual amplitude, it turns out that there's an exact expression that is given by the topological vertex. The exact expression doesn't matter so much, that except that I want to focus on this factor here. It's a function of trace of U, where U is this holonomy. And this holonomy should be pulled back to the world sheet using the embedding function X, which means that this wave function Z plus of U really is a function no of string loops. It's a function of the string loops through the holonomy U, and each trace U to the n factor actually describes a string loop that winds n times around the equator. More generally, I can consider a basis of states that live on the space of loops along this equator. And I can define a basis I call the winding basis, which is given by these multi-trace factors. So the conclusion is that the closed string Hilbert space is spanned by such multi-trace factors, and they can be interpreted as the set of class functions on our gauge group U infinity. Okay, let me pause here for a moment. So are there any questions just about the definition of the states and in string theory? Okay, so let me move on. So now I want to discuss the factorization problem and the shrinkable boundary condition, but in the language of extended TQFT. So in quantum field theory, if we have a Euclidean path integral in space-time, we can define local factorization using the Euclidean evolution, which changes the topology of the Cauchy slice. So for example, here, if I start with a circle, as my time slice and evolve into an interval, this defines the factorization of the circle. Similarly, I can cut the interval into two intervals using the Euclidean evolution, and so on and so forth. However, in string theory, and also even in conformal field theory, we don't have a space-time path integral. So we have to resort to a categorical reformulation of the path integral in terms of a cobordism theory. A cobordism description of the path integral is a generator and relations approach where we don't have a path integral over path integration over local fields. So I want to say more about what this means. So cobordisms form a category. The objects in this category are circles. So I'm thinking now in two dimensions. The objects here are codimension one manifolds, which are circles. The morphisms in this category are the cobordisms. They're just the manifolds that interpolate between initial circles and final circles. And then there are sewing relations, which tell us rules for how the gluing of these cobordisms work. The definition of a two-dimensional closed TQFT is just a rule that assigns a Hilbert space to circles, which I call H-closed, and linear maps to cobordisms. The composition of these linear maps have to satisfy these sewing relations. Notice that these cobordisms are in target space, so this is not a well-cheat picture I'm drawing here. Two-dimensional TQFT actually has a structure of a Frobenius algebra, where the multiplication is given by this pair of pans diagram here. This object will take two circles to one circle, which means it maps the Hilbert space of H closed times H closed to H closed, which is a multiplication map from taking two states into one. To describe entanglement and factorization, we need to cut open these codimension one time slices. This is what we mean by the extension of the TQFT, which introduces, in the case of 2D, these one-dimensional manifolds with boundaries. And the boundaries have these labels E that label edge modes that are supported there. So once we introduce the interval, we have new cobordisms that connect initial and final intervals, and also ones that connect initial circles with final intervals and vice versa. So now we have a more complex cobordism theory. We have many cobordisms, and we treat the factorization maps as just elements of this cobordism data. So for example, here is the factorization map taking one interval to two, and another one taking a circle to an interval. These cobordisms are subject to the local constraints that are given by sewing relations. There are sewing relations between the open and closed sector that were worked out by these people here. And so these are some examples of these sewing relations here. Now, I want to say a bit more about the extended TQFT in the open sector. So now we have to assign to open intervals a Hilbert space I call H open. And there are some operations that are important here. So there's this operation that looks like half of an annulus. It takes two intervals into nothing. That means it maps tensor product of states into complex numbers, which is a bilinear form. It's invertible. The inverse is given by the opposite half annulus. And when you glue them together in this fashion, you can straighten them out and get the identity operator. It actually would be the identity in a topological theory, but in our case, our theory is a little more than topological. It has some area dependence. So it gives you a propagator. And now we can define a notion of trace using these half annuli. We just glue them together to make an annulus. And this annulus will be our definition of trace on the open string Hilbert space. So the new ingredient that Will and I introduced into this extended TQFT language is called the Ebring axiom. It's simply based on the idea that factorization should not change the state. So if I take a circle and split it and fuse it back, I'll do the same with the interval. It should be the same as doing nothing because the entanglement boundary is not a real physical boundary. So we introduce an axiom to axiomatize this shrinkable boundary condition that we discussed in the introduction. It's given by this diagram here on the left, and it is strong enough when combined with the rest of the sewing relations to imply that all holes in these diagrams can be closed. The one particular diagram that'll be important to us is this one, which says a sphere is equal to an annulus with the shrinkable boundary condition. This is a reformulation of Suskin and Oglin's open closed string duality, but in the target space language. So once we have this E-brain axiom, we combine it with the Solomon relations to give a complete set of constraints, which we can solve to get the factorization maps and edge modes by a bootstrap-like method. Okay, so I should pause here again to see if there are any questions about this. I haven't introduced sort of the string theory yet. This still is just a story with category theory, but that will be an important component to the rest of the talk.
I have a question.
Yes.
It looks like you're introducing only one boundary condition E, but there could be much more than the one.
So I think that's a potential confusion with notation. So when I put E here, I'm not saying there's one boundary condition. From the point of view of this categorical formulation, E is just a label. So when I write down an interval with E's here, it just means that my TQFT is going to assign some open Hilbert space to this interval here. And I should really have labeled H open with E and E. If I had changed the labeling on either side, if I call it A or B, then I have another Hilbert space that the TQFT will assign to the interval that's labeled like A and B or something. So in particular, this E here is going to correspond to, it can correspond to like sum over different boundary conditions. I didn't mean to use E to denote a single boundary condition. It's meant to denote the fact that whatever the Hilbert space this TQFT assigns to this object, in the end, it's going to reproduce this shrinkable boundary condition that we're looking for.
So you mean there's H open, which depends on many, many labels, the brain labels or whatever. And then your assumption is that inside that Hilbert space, there's one particular label that has all these properties, right? And then you have to find it. It's a particular state. It's a particular boundary state then.
Right. So I'm not associating. Yeah. So the label is literally just a label for the picture, for the interval. And then I'm going to have to tell you how to assign a Hilbert space to a particular choice of labels. And that assignment, I don't know. So that assignment is something that I'm going to solve for using these constraints. Right. So I don't know what it is. I'm just going to try. So I'm going to give you some linear maps, right, with these labelings. And the way I know I got the right answer is if these linear maps satisfy all the constraints given by the Solomon relations. And So there is a game here where I have to solve for something. We don't know what it is. And there's no assumption that it's a particular boundary condition. So for example, in a CFT, you can play this game and you find that you have to sum over sum over conformal boundary conditions and stuff like that.
Yeah, and the game is to find the measure of summation. What is the right measure that ensures that?
Yeah, so that will be an issue that's definitely an issue in CFT. I think that, even though in this case, I think we have something discrete, but I think we can still consider our solution in the topological string case, finding a measure. That's also, I think, a valid point of view. Okay, so I'll move on, but please continue to ask questions and don't feel free to interrupt me anytime. So now I want to specify a particular closed TQFT for the A model string and define what I mean by generalized entropy. So I'm going to consider the A model string theory on a particular target space, which is a sum of line bundles over Riemann surface S. What's remarkable is that the amplitudes, the multi-string amplitudes on this kind of target space are the same, or they satisfy the same Solling rules as closed TQFT. Now the cobordisms can still be drawn as two-dimensional surfaces, but we have to label them with two integers to capture the Chern class of this line bundle. So they tell you about the bundle structure. So this object here, this pair of pants here now is a six-dimensional target space geometry. And in particular, our resolved conifold geometry is given by this sphere here, It is the overlap of the Hartle-Hawking state with this bra. And we just basically sum the turn classes. So we get minus one, comma, minus one. So we have a non-trivial fiber bundle structure for the resolved quantum fold over this sphere. The new ingredients that are introduced in this A model GKFT are one, the turn class labelings, but also a Q deformation of the edge modes. I will say more about this as we go on, but one of the effects is that this notion of trace given by the annulus is not the usual trace. It's called the quantum trace. It's some modified notion of the trace on the open string Hilbert space. And also there is some non-trivial braiding involved that wasn't there in the two-dimensional cobordisms that I described earlier. I'm gonna make one further important restriction on target space, which is the Calabi-Yau condition. In terms of the line bundle structure, it translates to saying that the sum of the Chern classes have to be negative the Euler characteristic of the Riemann surface. This restricts to a subcategory of these two cobordisms with line bundles that again forms a Frobenius algebra. It's generated by these four objects here. The first one here is actually our Hartle-Hawking state. And so now our sorting relations will have these labelings. For example, our E-brain condition corresponds to closing off this hole with this Calabi-Yau cap that has a non-trivial bundle structure. Now, I want to emphasize again that these pictures are not on the worksheet. These are space-time pictures. So when we sew together these cobordisms, what we're really doing is we're introducing a large n number of brains in the in and out boundaries on these circles. And then when we glue things, we're actually annihilating these brains and anti-brains to glue together the string amplitudes. Now, on the set of target spaces that are of this form and also satisfy the Calabi-Yau condition, we can write down the partitions function. It has a very simple form. It has a sum over representation labels, which we can associate with the Young tableau. There's a dimension factor here, DQR, which is a Q-deformed version of the symmetric group dimension. There is a phase here that's important because its exponent captures this non-trivial fiber bundle structure. There's a Boltzmann factor with an area T and L of R is the number of boxes in the Young tableau. And the Q deformation parameter is exponential of IG string. So in particular, if I look at the partition function on a sphere with minus one comma minus one Chern class, this is the resolved quantum fold and has this simple form. We can define a replica trick on this geometry similar to generalized entropy and gravity by just opening up the angle around two antipodal points on the sphere. So remember, this is still a six-dimensional geometry. So what's really happening here is that this equator that seems to be split by these two antipodal points is really a co-dimension one slice of the resolved quantum fold. And this is a kind of replica calculation we would do to split a co-dimension one slice of this 6D manifold. If we glue together the replica manifold in the naive way, using the naive sort of cyclic gluing, what we find is that the Chern classes change. So this resolved quantum fold has minus one comma minus one Chern class. And if we replicate n times, we get minus n comma minus n. The problem is that with this kind of replication is that if we make an analytic continuation to non-integer n, there's no geometric interpretation because we can't have like non-integer Chern class. So instead, we're going to impose a topological constraint that the bundle structure does not change when we replicate, which also means that the Calabi-Yau condition is always preserved. This means that when we do the replication, only the Kähler modulus of this base manifold, this sphere, is replicated. We just increase the volume T by n times. And the whole bundle structure just stays the same. It's always minus one, comma minus one. If we do this, then the partition function is simple. On this replicated manifold, we just rescale T to n times T because the partition function only cares about the Kähler modulus. And then we can define a generalized entropy using the same formula we used in the introduction. And we find that we get a very intuitive answer that looks like exactly like the entanglement entropy of a non-abelian gauge theory. There is a representation label R that seems to be a label for some kind of edge mode symmetry. There's a probability factor P of R. And this term here is a Shannon entropy for that probability factor. The second term here, this log DQR term, is the analog of the area term in generalized entropy, because this two here comes from cutting this equator twice. It's counting the number of entangling surfaces. And it would seem that DQR plays a role in edge mode degeneracy. So I want to say a little bit more about shrinkable boundary conditions, a lot sort of the discussion in the intro. So we have this replicated manifold Z of beta. And we said earlier that in order to interpret Z of beta as a trace, we should remove two caps near the entangling surfaces. That will give us this manifold with two holes where we put some shrinkable boundary condition E there. The boundary state that we should introduce here is simply the sort of the path that go over this little cap here, right? And that cap has non-trivial topology. In fact, this cap has to satisfy the Calabi-Yau condition. So we get this object here, this Calabi-Yau cap with 0, comma minus 1 Chern class describing the cap on this right side here. The boundary state is just given by the same state I showed you earlier in the TQFT discussion. It's a 0, comma minus 1 hemisphere, except that it has 0 area. So there's no dependence on Kalin modulus here. And it looks, if you were in the tutorial that I gave last week, you might recognize this expression. If I replace what's in the box with dimension of R, where R is a representation of UN, then this would be the group theory expression for a delta function that sets this holonomy U to be 1. In this case, we have a new formula, and these dimension factors turn this into a delta function that sets U to be something not equal to 1. It sets U to be something non-trivial that I label by D. It is a diagonal matrix of phases, and we're going to treat it as some element of UN as n goes to infinity. In fact, we'll identify this object with something called the Drenfeld element of a quantum group, and it will be important to this this measure that Lauren was talking about earlier. Okay, let me pause here. Are there any questions about this notion of Calabi-Yau caps and shrinkable boundary conditions?
I had a question from slightly earlier.
Sure, please.
I was just wondering if this was, like, what motivated this choice for fixing the Chern class as a function of n? Like, I don't know. It just seems like it's kind of this general question of how are you supposed to define the replica trick in general. I would think that you could have some defect bundles that at non-integer n or something like that, some similar to like the cosmic brain type constructions in gravity or something like that. I'm just curious how you...
Right. So I think that there's a couple of ways to motivate this. One is that I described this idea that if I restrict to Calabi-Yau manifolds, then I have this subcategory where these cobordisms form a Frobenius algebra. So it's like a simpler subset of the larger TQFT. And so it seems natural to stay within the same category when I do the replica trick. But the real, I think, reason is I want to reproduce some kind of geometric entropy. And I think you're alluding to a case where there's gravity, and gravity gives a geometric interpretation to replica manifold in situations where ordinary QFT doesn't, right? In this case, there's not really gravity. This topological theory doesn't have a graviton. So I would not know how to do the gravitational trick where you put the cosmic brain in there, and then it can give you a geometrical interpretation even when this n is not an integer. So what I want to do is just to apply a constraint such that I always have a geometric entropy. There's always a well-defined space-time for any beta for my string to propagate on. So that's sort of, I think, probably the most important motivation. And maybe an even better answer is that in the end, you can define anything you want. In the question is it a statistical mechanical entropy? And the methods, so it turns out that this definition gives us a quantity that we can compute in a quantum mechanical sense. And it is definitely a statistical mechanical entropy. And I actually don't know what to do when I don't impose this constraint. The formula has become more complicated for the partition functions, and it's not obvious what the edge modes are anymore. I'm not sure that, did I answer the question, or maybe I was maybe cheating a bit. Was that sufficient?
Yeah, it's kind of helpful. Yeah, I'm just wondering if there was an arbitrariness. I was thinking that there you could use non-integer n by having like a defect in the whole bundle, but I don't know if that's right.
When you say defect, are you referring? Sorry, I just didn't understand what it meant. I thought you were thinking about like in ADS-CFT where you have this cosmic string that causes a back reaction on the geometry. So even for non-integer n, you have some like bulk space time. Are you referring to that defect or something else?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have something specific in mind. So maybe we can discuss that later.
I'm happy to say that you're definitely right that we could have chosen it something different. Like I could have attacked the harder problem of just letting the Turing class change, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's fine. There's no geometric interpretation that's nice, but I can still define an entropy and try to find a canonical answer. So let's just say that we made a choice to make life easier in this case. And the answer looks appealing to us and relates to generalized entropy as we know it. Okay, so—
I have a question.
Yes, please.
Gabriel, so there you introduce somehow, you know, you deform your Young-Mills, UN Young-Mills to a quantum groups deformation of Young-Mills theory.
Yeah.
Which people did before, but you need to explain why or what's the geometry behind. I mean, I understand you can deform UN, but do you have a geometrical explanation for this quantum groups deformation?
It comes from the string theory. So somehow—
What about the string theory, you know, what's the—
Let's see, so it's hard for me to pinpoint exactly where it comes from. So let me just say what I know and see if we can find it together. So we're able to compute the string theory partition functions exactly. And we find that these quantum dimensions just appear when we look at the partition function.
Right? You're saying it's a calculation.
Right. So I understand it partly via duality. So there is a duality between string theory and transcendence theory. And in the dual transcendence theory, the world sheets are mapped to Wilson loops. So when I study, like when I look at this picture, there are world sheets wrapping this sphere here. But in the dual transcendence theory, we have Wilson loops. And when you compute expectation values of Wilson loops, you get quantum dimensions. So in the dual theory, the reason there are quantum groups would be the same reason there are quantum groups in transcendence theory. Now—
You mean the transcendence theory is the string field theory, is that?
Yes, the string field theory, yes. In the dual theory, the transcendence theory is the string field theory. There's also a transcendence theory going on here there's another transcendence theory appearing here on the brain. So in the definition of the state here, I said that really I put some brain here that cuts through the equator that has this hyperbolic shape. But the theory on this brain, the word form theory, is transimons. I didn't write it here because I just omitted it, but there's actually transimons theory here. So when you study the cutting, so the transimons theory itself is known to have quantum group symmetry. But in particular, when you try to satisfy Gauss law for the transimons theory with this sort of boundary of the world sheet acting like a Wilson loop, you find that satisfying Gauss law in the presence of Wilson loops naturally gives rise to some kind of quantum group notion of the holonomy. This is some older work from Witten back in his paper about QFT and the Jones polynomial. So one way or another, I guess my answer is somehow just trying to go back to transimons theory. So I think that's probably the best answer that I have, that secretly the string theory is related to transimons. So maybe we can discuss towards the end of the talk with whether maybe there's a better answer that we can give to why there's a quantum group symmetry. Let me get to D-brains. So I want to explain what the edge modes are and why they are D-brains, and then give a canonical calculation of time and entropy. It looks like it's 12:47 my time. Dominic, can you just tell me how much time I have left?
About 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay, good. So let me just review the setup of this problem that we have to factorize the closed string state. So we have a Hodel-Hawking state here, given by this hemisphere. And we have an explicit expression that comes from doing the calculation of the string amplitudes. There's a wave function here. I chose to use a different basis where I take a trace in an irreducible representation R. And now we solve for the factorization map subject to all these QQFT sorting relations and also the E-brain axiom that we described earlier. So this is a picture of the factorization map. It takes closed string states and it cuts them twice to make open string states. If we can solve for this diagram here, then we can take our resolved quantum fold and cut it open. So we take the state, the ket, and then we split it open into open string states and do the same with the bra. And then we get exactly the Susskind-Ulam picture that we want. When we compute the entanglement entropy using the replica trick on the sphere, we find that this sphere really is a trace, and therefore there's a statistical mechanical meaning to entropy, to the generalized entropy. It turns out that in order to satisfy these axioms, the edge mode symmetry associated with this theory has to be Q deformed. It's U infinity Q, which is some large N limit of U and Q. And so what this tells us is that the open string edge modes are actually anions, because this is a symmetry group of anions. And I also did a sleight of hand here. In the previous slide, I wrote trace R of U, but I upgraded this trace into a quantum trace, because this is what's necessary to respect the quantum group symmetry. So let me say more about these edge modes as D-brains. So we have this state here, this Hodel-Hawking state, and we said that it's given by string amplitudes for vertices ending on brains. These brains have a topology of a torus. Now I want to cut the closed string loops that live inside the torus. So what I do is I introduce another set of brains, L prime. And this L prime is a Lagrangian manifold that cuts L along these two disk-like regions here. So it cuts through the closed string. And now I have two open strings, Xij in the A region, Xij in the B region. There are some ij indices because now they're Champakin indices. Now, this Wilson loop going around the boundary of the world sheet here, I can split into Wilson lines in the A region and B region. But it's important that these are Q-deformed Wilson lines. And I can write a Wilson loop as just a product of the Wilson lines, like so. And this basically defines a factorization map, because our closed string Hilbert space is spanned by these characters, these quantum characters. And so I can just define a factorization map by writing U as a product of two Wilson lines. if I write this trace out explicitly, I get this answer here. In here, this R of U, I, K are matrix elements in some representation of the quantum group applied to the holonomy, the Wilson line inside A region. So this object here, R of U, I, K, is actually a wave function inside the region A. And this object is a wave function inside region B. So this is a factorized wave function with some coefficients here that's given by the matrix elements of this Drenfeld element, which I will have to explain in more detail in the next slide. So I mentioned all this stuff about QD formed Wilson lines, but I didn't really say what QD formation means. So let me just explain that briefly. Let's take the Q goes to one case. So there we have, that corresponds to zero string coupling. And there we have a commutative algebra of functions on UN. It's generated by these, what I call open string wave functions. It is just a product of matrix elements of UN. The indices here are Champagne factors, which I associate with these entanglement brains I was talking about. There are these indices that correspond to endpoints here of this open string. The statistics of these objects is bosonic because multiplication of matrix elements is commutative. However, when I turn on the string coupling, Q is no longer one. And now we get a non-commutative algebra of functions as the set of wave functions for my open string Hilbert space. These are given by the same expressions. It's still this product of many matrix elements, except that these matrix elements do not commute. They instead satisfy some statistics defined by the R matrix. So our open string Hilbert space, which we assigned to this subregion here, is now this non-commutative algebra of functions. Now, we mentioned the Drenfeld element several times, so I want to explain it in the context of U, N, Q. A quantum group element G acts on these open string wave functions we discussed earlier by conjugation, or at least a QD form version of conjugation. This is what I mean by the edge mode symmetry. And the invariant trace function is given by the quantum trace, which is just the regular trace, but with the insertion of an operator. This operator is the Drenfeld element, which is, again, a diagonal matrix of phases. Its job is that when you do the quantum trace where you just take trace of U, so this object, quantum trace of one, is really the regular trace of U or U inverse, it gives you back the quantum dimension. So what is a quantum dimension? It is a dimension of the collective Hilbert space of many anions. In this case, these anions come from the endpoints of the open string. When there is a large n number of anions of type R, the collective Hilbert space, the non-local Hilbert space of these many anions, has a dimension that grows like dim Q R to the n. Now, to talk about the string theory, we have to take a large n limit of that Drenfeld element we just discussed. This is a bit subtle because you have to analytically continue Q, and there has to be some magic by which UN quantum dimensions turn into the quantum dimensions of symmetric groups. So the explicit formula that I wrote down earlier for this Drenfeld element just corresponds to rescaling this Drenfeld element U of UN by this factor to get rid of the capital N dependence. However, there's still some non-trivial N dependence when we take a trace because the indices of D run from one to large N. And the magic here is that when we compute using this limit that I discussed, you don't, on the right-hand side here, we get a symmetric group dimension instead of a UN dimension. It turns out that this special limit here also plays a role in relating the A model string theory to QD form to the Yang-Mills, but also to the Gopakuma, in the Gopakuma-Vava duality, which relates closed string theory to open string theory. So there's something about this formula that captures open closed string duality, an actual sort of physical open closed string duality that is the topological analog of NACFT. And we learned earlier that this D is also the holonomy that defines the shrinkable boundary condition when we have this Calabi-Yau cap here. So this is really a central thing in this discussion. And so Laura mentioned something about measures. So this D here is basically telling us how to count the dimension of the Hilbert space, right? So instead of getting a integer, generically we get a quantum dimension, which is not an integer. And in this case, there's something even fancier about the measure, because when we take this trace here, we get some object has phases in it. This Q is a phase, and the phase knows about the high dimensional structure of the string of the string theory target space. Okay, so hopefully I have enough time to just do the final slide. I just want to give what the canonical calculation of the entanglement entropy looks like in the cobordism language. We start with our state given by this cap here, and we factorize it using this map. And using the topological sorting relations, we can take this object and then we kind of pull the zipper up and we get it into the form of a half annulus. This is something like a thermal field double state that's entangled between the two subregions. Then we compute the density matrix and we factorize it in a similar way. We take the hemispheres and then we just turn them into half annuli. Now we do the reduction, we do a reduced density matrix. So here's region A and region B. We have to do a partial trace using the cobordism available to us, which is this half annulus here. When we do that, we can use the topological relations again to just straighten out the zigzag pattern here. So we just get a strip. And a strip in this theory is just the propagator. It's written here, and explicitly it is degenerate for fixed R, as it should be, because the reduced density matrix should commute with the edge mode symmetry. In this case, we have this U and Q edge mode symmetry at large N, which is responsible for the degeneracy. Now, we said earlier that this Susskind-Ulglum idea is translated into saying annulus equals to sphere. In particular, if I take the quantum trace of this reduced density matrix, I again use this half annuli to connect the initial and the final interval here, and I get back the annulus. We already saw that because of the E-brain axiom, this is equal to the sphere, and we can check this explicitly. But I would reiterate that there is something magical happening here, because there's a sum over brains on the left-hand side in this annulus. So summing over open string amplitudes gave us a closed string amplitude. So there's some sort of large N open closed string duality in this equation here. Actually, I've skipped a slide, sorry. So the actual answer for the entropy is also interesting. Again, in this theory, we're only allowed to use quantum traces because we only define traces using, first of all, we want to do things that are invariant. We only define a trace as invariant under our edge mode symmetry. And second of all, we want to just define things using our cobordisms. And the annulus diagram here is just not a regular trace, it's a quantum trace. But as a result, the entropy formula has changed. Is not trace rho log rho, there's an insertion of a D here. So it turns out that this formula gives us back exactly the generalized entropy, which we computed earlier using the replica trick. And moreover, this form of the entropy, this trace D rho log rho, is exactly the same formula for generalized entropy that was obtained in JT gravity by these people here. In that context, they had a different name for this operator. They called it a de facto operator. But we showed that we can give it some kind of symmetry interpretation in terms of the edge mode symmetry and the quantum trace that you have to define to be invariant under that symmetry. So that's another reason that I think, so somebody asked about the choice of the Calabi-Yau condition. That choice led to a definition of generalized entropy, which has a canonical definition, which really looks exactly like generalized entropy in an actual, at least a low dimensional theory of gravity. I think I want to end here. I have some extra slides, but I think probably it's best to leave things for questions. And I would just say a few sort of future directions and questions. So we were able to define generalized entropy in topological string theory and give a canonical calculation. But the real question we want to ask is, what does this teach us about entanglement in a general string theory? Are we probing some universal sector of edge modes, or are we doing something special to topological strings? The second thing is that I mentioned many times that there are brains that make up the edge modes, but we were really defining them using TQFT language in this categorical way. I didn't give a worksheet description, so it will be interesting to study how that emerges. In particular, any way of understanding this open-closed string duality has to explain how a worksheet sigma model with holes in it, an open string sigma model, can be equal to a closed string sigma model. A very tempting conjecture to make is that exactly the same mechanism that's responsible for Gopakuma-Bafa duality, which is exactly this large N, you know, open closed string duality where brains dissolve into flux, maybe exactly the same mechanism on the worksheet is responsible for how these entanglement brains also dissolve. The paper that we're writing now, that hopefully will come out soon, tries to get at this in a more precise way. So I think I'll stop now for questions, and then we can discuss more about particular topics. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for the nice talk. Are there any questions? I would say people just unmute themselves and.
I have a question.
Yes.
It's a very nice talk. I was wondering about whether you thought about the JT gravity can also be formulated as topological string. So in that case, you can think about it as a B model on a local geometry of the Calabia given by Y squared sinh squared X, sinh squared square root of X plus UV. So that's similar in spirit to what you're doing, but you're doing somewhat like A model versus B model kind of. But can you actually directly relate your considerations to that in that language too? And,
right. So I'm not. Yes. I'm vaguely aware of that relation, and that's definitely something we want to look into. I'm not as familiar with the B model. What I do understand is that a very precise statement about this entanglement boundary condition in this paper of Jeffers Koschmeyer suggests that a very similar sort of TQFT reasoning works for the JT gravity. And I'm not sure exactly how that works for the B model. I think maybe you can tell me more about that, but let me say something about that and see if that would be helpful, which is the following. So I mentioned something about shrinkable boundary conditions. And the idea is in JT, you can formulate as a BF gauge theory. And there, if you want to fill in a hole with just a normal BF gauge theory pattern row, there's no problem, it's local. However, the gravity pattern row is not equal to the BF gauge theory. It's actually a constrained version of the BF gauge theory. So that means that there's this topological constraint. And one way to describe that constraint is to say that I can say that I have a gravity pattern rule on a disk, and that gives to when I do that pattern rule, I get a non-trivial holonomy around the hole. And you can say that basically there's some kind of defect operator here that punctured this disk to make a non-trivial holonomy possible. Another way to say the same thing is you can say, I insist on a local boundary condition and then push the defect operator onto the interval. This is the reason that this partition function that they were trying to compute in JT gravity on the disk is not just a trace. It's trace with an operator insertion. And that gives you this kind of we call it QD form, but this is just the answer for the entropy. This kind of reasoning, I would assume, because it's general, right? It's not, it's just a fact about the fact that the amplitudes of the JT gravity satisfy the rules of like say extended TQFT and so forth and has a shrinkable boundary condition. I think this kind of reasoning would continue to be valid, but I actually don't know enough about the B model to know if there are some other technical problems with doing the same thing we did here in that case.
I see. Now, and also you mentioned the Q deformation. You suggested in your, you didn't go over it, but you had in your concluding slide, question whether or not the JT gravity has a Q deformed version. And that actually is something that there is a deformation of JT gravity in the following sense that people have not studied. The topological B model has a Nekrasov deformation. And therefore, there are, in addition to the topological string, there's this other parameter, which is this refinement of topological string. So, so I wonder whether your Q is going to be mapped to this Nekrasov deformation of the JT gravity, because that there is an extra deformation nobody has studied.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that. So we were thinking about some other known ways of getting Q deformations. There are some works of Thomas Merchants that consider Q deformations that come from three-dimensional gravity in the reduction to JT. And there's also some work on Q deforming the SYK model, which underlies the JT gravity. But I wasn't aware of that particular.
I can say in the easier language. So if you take the matrix model dual to the JT gravity, the van der Mond is usually raised to the power of 2. But if it's raised to the fractional power beta, that beta is that deformation.
I see. Yeah, I think that would be a very interesting follow-up to try to see if we can see a similar structure as we found here. Yeah, I wasn't aware of that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, are there any more questions?
Well, maybe I'd like to continue on this quantum group and this defect operator. So maybe that's maybe what I was asking for a bit more, like the reason that there is a defect operator appearing on the amplitude. Because once you have an operator like D, and you have consistency of the fusion operator, maybe the quantum group structure appears naturally. So can you say more about the relationship between the defect operator and the quantum groups and the geometry of it?
So I understand the defect operator purely in a topological sense. So so maybe I'm not sure this is a good starting point, but if I start with this JT gravity, a priori, I don't know anything about quantum groups. I just know that if I do a gravity path integral on this cap, right, I get a, I mean, if I want to reproduce that cap somehow with this boundary condition, I need to reproduce the Einstein-Hilbert term. And, well, I can try to use the Gauss-Bonnet theorem.
Which boundary condition are you? When you say this boundary condition, you mean you have a specific boundary condition?
So I don't, so is this U here, right? So I'm just saying, is there a Lagrangian in some sense on this annulus that gives me the same action as on the disk? Mm-hmm. And the issue here is that what happens is if you look at the Gauss-Bonnet theorem, then there's a bulk and boundary term and they add to give you 1 for the disk. So on this picture, if you're only allowed to use the boundary term to reproduce the bulk, the term with the, you know, Ricci scalar, if the Euler characteristic were 0, it would work, right? Because you would say, oh, I integrate the extrinsic curvature around this circle and it's going to, you know, be plus or minus, it'll give you back the Ricci scalar term. But in this case, the disk has Euler characteristic 1, and there's no way you can't reproduce it with a integral of a local term around this boundary. And that's the kind of reasoning that Jaspers and Kaschmeier used to say that in a gravity path integral with an Einstein-Hilbert term, you're always going to be stuck with something non-local when you study the boundary condition here and study that something non-local in time, I should say, right? Because we can make this hole very small, it looks local, but in the time, the circle, the time going around the circle, you get something non-local. And that non-locality is the reason for this defect operator.
You have something more precise. You have this defect operator has to be this quantum group, you know, the quantum group generator of the dimension. So
we don't know.
There should be a reason for that. like the defect operator cannot be arbitrary. There has to be some consistency condition.
Right, that's what we're trying to understand in JT. So in our case, we understand it almost from the get-go because we understood, that it was actually understood long ago that when you cut the circle in 2D form, in QD from Young Mills, you have to involve quantum traces. And we know quantum traces involve.
But this. Do you understand it as a defect there too?
Yes. I mean, I'm not sure if it's in the way that you are thinking of, but this is maybe a little bit convoluted reasoning, but so if I try to do this has to do with the Calabi-Yau condition. So if I try to do the replication without, so this is a picture of a density matrix that you would use, you would get without using this quantum trace. So in the earlier slide, I did this zigzag pattern to do the partial trace, right? However, that's not the normal way you would do it. I mean, you would normally just trace things out by gluing them like this. And so what happens is that when you do the replica trick sort of naively and you glue things cyclically, what you find is you violate the Calabi-Yau condition. To fix it, basically you have to insert factors of this D inverse. But now I'm thinking about it not in the categorical way. I'm saying that on this replica manifold, if you glue things together in a cyclic way, you're going to violate the Calabi-Yau condition. So what you do to fix it is to insert a defect, a local operator at the entangling surface, and you insert for, if you replicate n times, you insert d to the minus n copies. And so it is in this sense that defect operator is a local operator that sort of forces, it's some kind of topological thing. It forces the Chern class to remain minus one comma minus one as you replicate. Mm-hmm. Again, I should say that what's interesting is this is not special to string theory. You find this in also quantum group spin chains. They have the same formula for this QD form entanglement entropy. And again, they have this defect operator in the replica trick calculation of the entanglement entropy for the spin chain. I don't think I can spell out why this topological defect operator has something to do with quantum group. At least not at the moment. I can't think of a good reason. If somebody in the audience can help, I would be very happy to entertain. Maybe is Will Donnelly possibly there, and does he have some ideas about why is this defect quantum group related? Okay, maybe not. I will just leave it as a puzzle. So I think that, in fact, that's the thing we want to understand in JT, because in fact, people didn't think that there was this quantum group related. So these papers of Jeffries Kochmeyer just said that the defect is there and it means that you don't get a normal entanglement entropy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have a particularly good answer to that question. You mentioned something about fusion. Actually, maybe you can tell me more about how, like, what fusion are you referring to? Like in this, like for example, in this string theory, are you talking about the fusion rules of the Wilson lines in transcendence theory, or?
Fusion of defects.
Okay. But
defects, I mean, can be fused and they have to satisfy some algebra.
Right, but I guess is there some special property of the defects that like how do you know that you need to have quantum groups, I guess?
The defect has to fuse into itself, right? So maybe we can chat after, but that's, you know, there are certain conditions on the defect that it cannot be arbitrary. It cannot be just, you know.
I see.
It cannot be an arbitrary operator D. It has to satisfy a lot of consistency axioms.
Right. Yeah, maybe there's some kind of chicken and the egg kind of question here about for example, I know that people say that in CFT there is a relation between quantum group and symmetry there, but I've never quite understood that completely. But I should say that I was assuming we're already in the discussion period, so I'm sorry if I'm dragging on and on. I think maybe I should defer to Dominic to end the talk part and just go to the maybe discussion part, if that's possible.